You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for the show that brings the magic right to your speakers. Ears up!
Man, it's Halloween, boys and girls. It's Halloween month. I got my Halloween shirt on. I was excited. I was like getting dressed for the show, which seems really weird because yeah, I now have to like get dressed. I think most human beings are already dressed by 7:30, but I'm like, nope.
Not me.
So I was like, oh, what am I going to wear? What dumb shirt am I going to wear? And I was like, oh, yeah, I have my Halloween shirts now. I can wear my Halloween shirts and not be like a goth or whatever. I don't know, man. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. Taryn is going to take us through the history of the Golden Horseshoe. Here at the Golden Horseshoe.
It's a good history. No one ever goes in the Golden Horseshoe, but you should, and hopefully you will after this.
Yeah, we're going to get a whole bunch of emails. I always do that. How dare you classify me as somebody who doesn't, but I know what you mean, because
I asked the Discord channel, and a lot of people were like, nah.
Yeah, I walk by it, and it's
basically,
fun.
Basically, yeah.
It's funny because, like, I felt like the worst Disneyland fan, podcaster, right, whatever I am, because the other day, Taryn's aunt and uncle go, hey, we're going to Disneyland with a bunch of friends and their families and stuff. We haven't been in like 25 years. What do we do? And I genuinely was like, I don't know. It's so different, especially like, you know, with COVID, because you don't have the fast passes. Normally be like, okay, not a problem. You're going to plan your day kind of around getting fast passes. You're only in Disneyland. There's only a couple things you can do, but that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Some rides have the reservation system. Some don't. I don't know. I don't know how to navigate the park at all anymore. And I felt like a charlatan. You know what I mean?
It is different.
It's different.
Yeah, it was difficult.
But we did it. I mean, don't get me wrong.
We did it. And I could do it again. But yeah, the key used to be the fast passes. But
right.
I don't even know how that works anymore. If it's on the app or like, I don't know.
I will be able to let you know. I'm going to Disneyland in November.
Oh, that's right. For my birthday, you're going. That's nice.
Tickets are bought and paid for. Thank you, Concierge, once again.
Nice.
I was like, I don't want to make reservations. So I just emailed the same person who did my Disney World trip. That's
nice, awesome. Dude. Hell yeah. Concierge.com, everybody. You live like Bev. Live your...
run up that credit card.
Here's a new catchphrase. Live your Bev life.
Oh my God.
Live your Bev life. That's a shirt.
That's what I'm good. Saying. Concierge.com. Live your Bev life. And it's you with a life. With like a Truly and flip flops.
Holding a credit card billing crying. But that being said, I'm gonna pay for the Lightning Pass for at least one of the days just so I can understand it.
Cool.
Smart.
Yeah.
And awesome. It's a tax write-off because I'm going to talk about it on the show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then when you do it, the first you have to dab in the middle of the park.
All right. So does my arm go up? Or?
Clean lines. Yep. 45 degrees. And then the down? Other one comes in 90 and then down. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nailed it.
Mr. P sent a video of him dabbing on Kylo Ren, dude.
Dang.
In his churro shirt. And it was great. Mr. P, can we put that on Instagram, please? I really want to do that. But anyway, we have a good show for you. So definitely go do what Bev does. Go to concierge.com. Have them do everything for you. This is sort of like the life that we want to live, is have other people do stuff for us. So check them out, concierge.com, Disney World, Disneyland,
and it's
all the
free.
Stuff. And it's free. You pay nothing extra. So definitely go check them all out. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. Not only us, but Supreme Resort is on Instagram. Bantha Milk is on Instagram. I know Rob over there is doing a lot more posting on Instagram now. He's like doing like Star Wars facts and stuff like that. So if you haven't followed Bantha Milk over there on Insta, you know, check him out. Is Scraping the Vault on Instagram? I don't really know. They sort of do their own social media, so I have no idea. But anyway, check them out. All our shows have some sort of social media present, so you know, check all that. Feedback for the show goes to Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. Show suggestions goes to Terrence, probably, at earsup-podcast.com. You can say hi.
Hi.
To Bev, and anything else, me, Jason, earsup-podcast.com. Taryn mentioned the Discord channel the other day. Wow. Couple minutes ago. Yeah, email me ago. If you guys want to jump in. It's still sort of like a beta, I guess. I don't know. I like Discord. I think it's fun. We're having nice conversations over there. It is sort of just like a chat room / forum thing, but not really. So if you want to come and like meet other Disneyland fans and just hang out with us, send me an email I guess that's really it. Send me an email. Or actually, if you're a Patreon supporter, there's an evergreen link in Patreon somewhere. So just search Discord, but just send me an email. I'll fire the Discord link, and one day I'll put it public, and you can just search for it and jump in. But Discord's fun, and it's a good time. Taryn, do we have feedback tonight?
We do.
Ho!
I know.
Heckin' fire, yes!
This is from, I don't know if I should give her name or her chat name.
Chat name.
This is from NotSoEvilQueen13 from the chat.
All right.
Says, I just saw the opening night of Harmonious at Epcot, and I'm looking forward to Jeremy's rant about how terrible it is. Period.
End. Oh, there's a blog.
There's a rant.
So I was thinking about reading that for the news segment. Because it's
quality writing, I have to admit.
I haven't read it, but I saw it and I was like, oh boy, here he goes.
Oh man. There's one particular paragraph that's my favorite.
Look, we're just going to do it right now.
Okay.
It's not that long. The title is Harmonious Fails at Epcot. 5 days after its initial debut, I have finally seen Epcot's new nighttime spectacular, Harmonious. I refused to watch the live stream, preferring to experience in cold and in person. I wanted no preconceived ideas of what it contained, apart from the inescapable descriptions Disney has served up over the past 2 years. Over the last several months, as the large barges crammed their way into the once beautiful World Showcase Lagoon, a place I have loved since I was a child, I began to worry. Tonight, seeing Harmonious in person, I realized my worries were warranted. Harmonious just doesn't miss the mark. It falls flat on its face. Disney had a golden opportunity to use their vast and diverse library of music to take us on an international musical journey around World Showcase and the world itself. Instead, we got a worse version of World of Color. Rather than feature varied and diverse musical instruments from around the world to weave a tapestry of music that transports you to distant ports of call, Harmonious features a sloppily orchestrated conglomeration of Disney music that only occasionally nods to the diversity of nations sitting along the banks of World Showcase. Allegedly, this show contains three acts: Gather, Celebrate, Unite. The problem is, it's very difficult to differentiate between these three acts. The show just starts, and it's a 20-minute clumsy mashup of somewhat remixed and unrelated Disney songs from various Disney movies. There is no story, no underlying theme that Disney uses these songs to highlight. It's conceivable that you could toss these songs up into the air, let them fall, and play them in whatever order they land, and you'd have the same basic show. Technologically, there's not much new here. It's all just bigger. Big screens, big fountains, and big barges too big to move out of sight during the daylight hours. Okay, these weird arms move, but they don't do much to enhance any story. During the show, the swinging arms conjure images of a flailing, wounded giant squid. These large, taco-like barges are just over-engineered piles of metal that block views during the day and distract during the show. And what about setting? Harmonious performs completely unaware of its own surroundings. While over at Magic Kingdom, quote, enchantment clumsily attempts to integrate the buildings of Main Street into the show, Harmonious seems to deliberately shun its own surroundings of World Showcase. Epcot, unlike any other venue, offers the unique ability for a show to take place in 360 degrees, surrounded by the beautifully crafted World Showcase countries. These 11 pavilions have historically had a prominent role in the shows before Harmonious barged its way into Epcot. It was almost as if the countries themselves were performing a show for us. United together by the festive elements of water, fire, and light, they embraced us and told us a story. Now they've been shoved to the background. Barely twinkling, they take a back seat to the same boisterous Disney tunes playing in every other park and most of the other park spectaculars. And there's like four more paragraphs, so I'm going to let you finish the rest. But that's Jeremy's take. So go to spectrorated.us, click on the blog, and let your eyeballs be wrapped in the wonderful writing styles of Jeremy.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all.
No. Was that it?
Yes.
All right. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a bunch of ways. Number one, subscribe to all our shows and listen to them all over and over and over again from different IP addresses. That would be great. But number two, you can head over to Etsy.com/shop/coviers, buy some shirts and some coviers and some masks and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. Number three, Patreon.com/earsup. Become a Patreon supporter, $2 a month minimum, you know, and you kind of just, you know, hang out. $5, you get the secret show and... And, you know, just go over there. You'll learn all about it. I don't know. We got a whole bunch of fun stuff, though. We're nice people.
The 21st Amendment Brewery's latest beer release, Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA, puts an island vacation in their whimsically designed cans. That's right, cans. This refreshing year-round release, Tropical IPA, is brewed with pale and Munich malts, brimming with Azaka, Citra Cryo, and Mosaic hops, and topped with a splash of pineapple flavor. The result is a clean, refreshing beer featuring a mix of sweet malt, balanced bitterness, fruit-forward hops, and a nice tropical vacation at the finish. Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA is available at your local good beer shop, neighborhood taproom, and anywhere else people come together to find great craft beer.
You know, the problem with listening to that over and over again is because I like mixed it and did it and helped Eric record it. And like, it's just an opportunity for me every single time to go, what could I have done better? Yeah, it's a little bit of a nightmare for me, to be honest with you. I mean, I like it. I liked it at first. And now I'm like, oh, man, I really should have done this, tweaked it a little bit. But whatever. It's all right. This is a message from Jimmy, speaking of the Supreme Resort. He says, the latest episode of the Supreme Resort is very special. On this episode, we welcomed Michelle London, who starred in Wicked on Broadway, who performed the role of Elsa on the very last performance of this too short-lived stage show, Frozen, the musical at Disney California Adventure. And apparently they also have Vanessa Ray, who's in Pretty Little Liars and Blue Bloods. She originated the role of Nemo in Finding Nemo, the musical at Disney's Animal Kingdom. The two shared some fascinating details of what it was like to perform in these shows, performing for a theme park audience, the audition process, their Disney fandom, various lifelong injuries received while performing in these shows, and much, much more. So check that out. That's the brand new episode of the Supreme Resort. They're getting some good guests. Jimmy's over there working hard.
That's cool.
To book some good guests.
Can he book guests for us?
Probably not. Probably not. He's concierge-ing.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So if you guys want to be concierge-ed by a celebrity, and you know, contact concierge and ask to be concierge-ed by Jimmy. I don't know. Anyway. All right, Taryn, you want to take us through the Golden Horseshoe, dude?
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
All right. This is the history of the Golden Horseshoe. We all know by now that Disneyland is an ongoing project, and Walt's intention was that it was never quite finished and it would always be changing. This is easily seen in many parts of the park, but there's one particular original park attraction that has been, at least on the surface, largely unchanged since 1955, the Golden Horseshoe. Having been fascinated by the Old West since he was a boy, it was always important to Walt to not only include a Western theme area in the park, but to really emphasize the Western frontier, which is why Frontierland exists, and even from the very first discussions, a Wild West saloon was always front and center. The interior of the Golden Horseshoe was designed by Harper Goff. Goff was so intertwined in the design and creation of Disneyland that he's often referred to as the second Imagineer. Being a close friend, colleague, and train connoisseur, Walt trusted Goff with his vision, and Goff not only created the first concept drawings for Disneyland, but was integral in much of the park's final creations by finalizing designs for things like Main Street and the Jungle Cruise, among many others. He then went on to play banjo in the Disneyland jazz band, the Firehouse Five Plus Two. So to say that Walt trusted Harper is an understatement. Now, before designing Disneyland, Harper Goff was the set designer for the movie Calamity Jane, starring Doris Day. So rather than it reinventing the wheel, Goff simply pulled out blueprints for the set from the movie, and the Golden Horseshoe was born. The resemblance between the movie set and the attraction is undeniable, with the stage, the orchestra pit, the mile-long bar. Honestly, the biggest difference is that it's only 5/8 the scale of the Calamity Jane set. The decor inside was also very similar, with the gold-accented wallpaper, ornate light fixtures, and the detailed wood-carved accents. This was to create a sense of luxury entertainment within the Wild West. The exterior of the building has the same Western style as the rest of Frontierland, and even though it is centrally located in the land, it's somehow still a bit inconspicuous and often gets overlooked. Over the years, they've worked on drawing people in by incorporating banners and, in more recent years, opulent signage, but it's still not exactly the most popular attraction. Now, in preparation for the opening of Disneyland, Walt hired comedian Wally Bogue and Don Novice to co-write a Wild West saloon show. Bogue, who was connected to Walt through Don, recounted his audition. Walt was sitting on his chair and he said, "Donald says you're pretty funny. Let's see what you've got." So I had this bag with a ventriloquist doll and I did a balloon routine and the bagpipes, a routine I picked up in Edinburgh in 1947. I finished with my dancing, and in those days, at the age of 34, I could do a flip-flop and a backflip and end with a bow. That's how I got the job.
Can you imagine at 34 being able to do a backflip?
No.
Also, I want to apologize for our Scottish listeners. It's Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Yeah. I just want to apologize.
I don't even know where that is.
Yeah. Scotland. It's the capital of Scotland, I think.
Well, we learned this evening. I don't know geography.
We did. You know what? We lived. We laughed. We're almost going to love.
Okay.
Yeah, we're almost there.
Good. So while the Golden Horseshoe was an opening day attraction, it actually ran prior to opening day. On July 16th, 1955, the day before Disneyland's grand opening, Walt and Lillian celebrated their 30th wedding anniversary with friends and family at a pre-opening gathering at Disneyland to show off the new park. After taking a maiden voyage on the Mark Twain riverboat, Walt, Lillian, their kids, and other guests went to what was then called Slewfoot Sue's Golden Horseshoe for dinner and the review. Is it review? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure I'm saying that right. Cut this out.
No, I'm going to leave it in.
Don't. <Yeah. laughs>
We're gonna send it to our editor in Edinburgh. The reviewer.
Shut up. At one point during the show, Pecos Bill, played by Wally Bogue, was firing blanks up into one of the balcony boxes where Walt suddenly appeared. Walt fired back using his forefinger and thumb and got so into the show that he actually climbed over the balcony and down to the stage, giving the audience a fright. But once he got to the stage, he just stood there smiling.
It's like, "I'm going to rip your face off, Wally."
No, I think it was more out of excitement or something.
Yeah, sure.
But still.
He really was just a big giant child with a gigantic checkbook.
Totally. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
From 1955 all the way until 1986, the Golden Horseshoe ran the same show and called it the Golden Horseshoe Review. This show is the first and longest running show performed at the Golden Horseshoe, and in fact, its 39,000 show run holds the Guinness World Record for the longest running musical. The show was a representation of the Western frontier with comedy, dancing girls, singing, and a beautiful leading lady. The original cast included Wally Bogue as a traveling salesman, Don Novice as a straight man, and Judy Marsh played the owner of the saloon, Slewfoot Sue. Before the actual show begins, there are a variety of slideshow-type advertisements shown on the backdrop. As the lights dim, the orchestra begins playing the opening number, which features Slewfoot Sue and her four dancing hall girls singing a welcome song. Sue then sings a song where she ventures into the audience to flirt with the male patrons and sings songs like "A Lady Has to Mind Her P's and Q's," which reveals that she won the Golden Horseshoe in a card game, Number one, please.
You can look but mustn't touch. It's only common sense, a case of self-defense. I walked into this place one day, so friendless and alone. I played one hand of cards for almost everything I own. The boss man drew a nine, and now this golden horseshoe's mine. A lady has to mind her P's and Q's. A lady has to mind her P's, her A, B, C, D, E, F, G's. A lady has to mind her P's and Q's.
Very good. Check out the pipes on her. You know, P's and Q's references? Mind your P's and Q's. Your pints and your quarts. It's like a drinking term for like,
really?
when there was like, I know that's what it is, but I feel like I remember reading that when there's like a bar fight or something going on in the bar, you just pay attention to your pint. Don't worry about it.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Did not know that.
Yeah. I could have that wrong, but I know it's pints and quarts. And I know it's a bar term.
Okay.
And that's all I'm going to tell. I'm just going to say that, and I'm going to stop saying it.
Good.
Thanks.
Okay. Next, Sue introduces the singer and MC of the show, an Irish tenor. After his opening song, they are joined by the show's comedian, the traveling salesman, who enters the saloon through the back doors and as he makes his way to the stage through the audience. Number two, please.
Man, I have here a few things I'd like to sell you. Now, if you don't mind there now,
just
ladies and
who
gentlemen.
Do you think you are coming
See,
in
See, I have
like
a very
this.
Sick peacock just fell in here. Not much in the way of feathers, but a little color right there. That's all I can say. Roll the drums here now.
Thank you very much, but who are you?
I'm Bill Bailey. I've come home.
Oh, no, you're not.
No, I'm Wally Bogue, that loud, long, lean, loquacious, sometimes iconic lunatic who loves to deal, delve, and dabble in delirious dialogue and dynamic dissertations, or in other words, I'm a traveling salesman.
Oh, you had things to sell there. Well, why don't you show all those charming people out there exactly what you have to sell in that carpet bag? And I wish you luck.
Okay, Footfoot, I'll do the best I can. You're staring at me. All together now.
Wally Bogue. Mm-hmm. That line where he goes, yeah, I had a peacock fall in my bag. He pulls out a rubber chicken. Listen, I don't know.
It's very campy and silly.
Yeah, it's vaudeville. He was like a vaudeville, you know, guy. And so a lot of it's like slapstick and just sight gags and stuff like that. So, which I think it works really well for this show because that's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the review is basically vaudeville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the traveling salesman leaves the stage at that point, and Sue and the MC sing a song together. Suddenly, Pecos Bill, traveling salesman, enters the stage with six shooters blazing and dialogue that leads to the singing of his signature song, Pecos Bill, which is also where the now famous teeth-spitting scene takes place. Now, this isn't something that would go in a podcast because it's not audio.
It's literally a visual gag.
Yeah, but if you've ever seen it, it's very funny. He basically holds beans in his mouth and spits them out as if they're his teeth falling out.
Yeah, baby lima beans specifically.
Baby lima beans, yes. So after a rousing version of the song Pecos Bill, sang by Sue, the tenor, and Pecos himself, and lots of horseplay, they are joined by the dancing girls who perform a saucy can-can number. Uh-huh. After the dance, the entire cast assembles for a final brief song and bow.
They eat bow?
No.
Nice, dude. That's very cool. I like that. A little fusion food?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
No, a physical bow.
No, all right.
On September 23rd, 1962, the cast performed its 10,000th show on NBC's The Wonderful World of Disney, where they performed the show in its entirety and even adding in a few skits. This is for all the world to see. During the 1960s, the cast took the show on the road several times when Walt volunteered the show as entertainment for the John Tracy Clinic for the Hearing Impaired's annual fundraising bazaar. This was one of Walt's favorite charities and often made himself useful at the events by bussing tables.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
I wonder, first of all, I wonder how long he was bussing tables. Is it like a PR stunt, like where he goes in and does five and then goes,
face,
you know, what waves?
Did anyone take a picture?
Yeah, and that's it. Or I feel like
part of me thinks no.
Part of me thinks like, no. And it probably wasn't even a press thing because when have you ever seen a photo of Walt bussing tables at this event?
Yeah.
But you've seen Walt on his trains or, you know, in the park and that kind of stuff. But you've never seen him. You don't really see those kinds of things.
Yeah, I don't think it was a PR stunt. I think he just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
The Golden Horseshoe Review's last show was on October 12th, 1986. On November 1st, 1986, a new show called the Golden Horseshoe Jamboree debuted. Now, this show opens with Sam the bartender having a crush on the show's star, Miss Lily. And in an attempt to get close to her, he auditions to be a part of the stage show. Miss Lily and her three dance hall girls are then joined by three dancing cowboys who love the girls and spend the number falling all over them.
Wow. Rude.
At this point, a wandering fiddler plays his way through the saloon in an audience participation number. My literal least favorite thing in the entire world.
Everybody now. I'm drinking my soda. I can't sing. Sorry.
And I'm like a theater person. And I just cannot stand that. Anyway, the girls and guys do a closing can-can number that ends with Sam disguising himself as a female dancer in order to be in the show and be close to his Miss Lily.
Wow.
The Golden Horseshoe Jamboree was performed live 5 times a day and eventually closed in 1994. It never gained the popularity of its predecessor, unfortunately. Now, on December 22nd, 1944, I don't know where I just went.
Remix.
Yeah.
On December 22nd, 1994, a new show began starring none other than Billy Hill and the Hillbillies.
Yay.
Now, this comic bluegrass band consisted of frontman Kirk Wall on rhythm guitar and fiddle, Dennis Fetchett on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, and harmonica, John Marshall on bass and fiddle, and Mario Hidalgo on mandolin and fiddle. They were later joined by John's brother, Evan Marshall, on mandolin and fiddle. There's a lot of fiddle.
Yes. Well, also, I mean, Mario Hidalgo does not sound like anybody that should be near a bluegrass band. Like, it's just, right? It's like the weirdest name. It's like, okay, you're a ringer. You're a stand-in. It's a fake name. You're running from the law.
I love it. Yeah. Would you mind playing clip number 3?
We didn't start here. I guess we weren't good enough. We had to work our way up. We began a long time ago, many years ago, doing a show on Thunder Ranch, and it was all about racing pigs. It was called Pig Mania. And we were the young hillbillies that raced those pigs. It was a good show. When that show closed, we moved out to Critter Country. We opened Splash Mountain before we made it into the Golden Horseshoe Saloon. And we're going to start off right now. We're going to do a medley of two great classics. We just call this Two Great Classics.
We pulled this clip from a YouTube video. Let this be a lesson to anybody who's trying to record these shows or anything. If you're not near the speaker or plugged into the soundboard, that's how your audio sounds. And it's never going to sound good.
The band actually formed in 1992 and performed as a bluegrass street band in Critter Country and Frontierland until they were approached with the idea to perform a scripted version of their street show at the Golden Horseshoe. This show begins with Billy Hill and the three brothers, all named Billy, playing an intro song that includes It's a Small World. The show then introduces each brother one by one, starting with Billy Elvis, who sings a familiar song like I Want You to Want Me or Stayin' Alive, followed by brother Billy Mandolin, who launches into the Billy Tell Overture. But this is interrupted halfway through by the others who attempt to distract the crowd with their shenanigans. Next, Billy Fiddle is introduced as he plays the Orange Blossom Special, which ends
song.
With, which ends with his attempt to break his Speed Finland record. The show concludes with the grand finale, a comedic parody of Riverdance entitled Huddle Prance.
Okay, good.
That's I love good. Everything about that.
Same. So after a four-year stint at the Golden Horseshoe, the band was asked to relocate to Big Thunder Ranch Barbecue so that a new show called Woody's Roundup could hit the Golden Horseshoe stage. This new child-friendly show ran for 8 months and featured characters from Toy Story. It didn't last, and Billy Hill and the Hillbillies were asked to come back. They stayed at the Golden Horseshoe until June 15th, 2012, when they were moved again to Big Thunder Ranch stage. The band performed there until they were fired and performed their final show on January 6th, 2014. Now, you can still catch them performing at Knott's Berry Farm under a new name, Crazy Kirk and the Hillbillies. Now, unlike the Golden Horseshoe Review and the following Jamboree, Billy Hill's band didn't perform every day. They had 2 days off, of course. Most people do. During these 2 days, another show was required, and longtime Disney performer had an idea. Dana Daniels started working at Disneyland in 1983, performing magic, juggling, and doing comedy on Main Street. He also worked 2 days a week at the Golden Horseshoe, performing as backup for Wally Bogue, playing Pecos Bill. Daniels' most popular gimmick was his psychic parrot routine. Please play clip number 4.
All right, we're going to need a gentleman from the audience. I need someone that has a little bit of cash on them, all right? Looking over here and here. Hi, and your name? Hi, Scott. Where are you from, Scott?
Orange County.
Orange County? Tustin. Tustin? Yeah, what do you do out there?
I'm an attorney.
An attorney. Okay, I'll take it easy. Now, we're going to, Scott, we're going to have Luigi here read your mind. We're going to turn him around so we can't see you. Okay? I have an object here. I don't want the bird to see what it is. Hold on to the item, picture in your mind. Luigi, what does Scott have in his hand?
Keys.
That's right.
And they love it.
They love it.
You don't see acts like this in Vegas. Okay, you have to go to Laughlin.
Huge slam on Laughlin out of nowhere. Huge slam. So, yeah, okay. Just a little explainer. It's a live parrot, and this is actually from his act at the, this specific one was from the act at the Magic Castle. So he does like the same sort of parrot act, but it is actually, you know, objectively funny. The parrot's on like a little perch, and, you know, when he says, I'm going to turn the parrot around so he can't see you, and everyone laughs, and he literally rotates the parrot so the back is, the parrot is to the guy, right? And then he takes his microphone. He goes, I'm going to, you know, I have an object. I don't want the parrot to seem like that banging sound. He had these big iron keys, and he's like thumping the microphone against the keys or whatever. And so the joke is that it's not really a psychic parrot because it's like someone on backstage leaning into another microphone saying, keys, and it's really not the parrot. And it's like, that's the joke.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's pretty funny.
So oh, no, I definitely laughed out loud over here.
You got to see it.
So he came up with this this routine, and he was so proud of the act that in 1994, when he heard that Disneyland would be ending the Golden Horseshoe Jamboree, he approached Disney with the idea that he would perform a one-man act on the 2 days that Billy Hill and the Hillbillies were not running. Disney agreed, and Daniels wrote the show himself, and with the help of a pianist and his loyal psychic parrot, Luigi, the Golden Horseshoe Variety Show was born. This show begins with a piano player warming up the audience with lively music, who's interrupted by the saloon janitor, who informs him that the entire cast of the variety show is missing. Realizing that the missing performance need to be replaced, the janitor agrees to fill in for all the missing acts. The janitor now goes backstage and proceeds to disguise himself as the various missing acts. Among them are Hillbilly Juggler, a balloon performer, and Waldo the Magician. The big finish comes when he brings out Luigi the Psychic Parrot. This show was temporarily canceled in 1999 to also make way for Woody's Roundup, but returned upon that show's ending.
Man, Toy Story is just wrecking careers, dude.
Yeah, it is. Jeez. Wow.
And it wasn't good. It was only for 8 months.
Yeah, and it was not successful, clearly. No.
So they brought it back again.
Yeah. No, they didn't bring it back again. This was the same time period.
Oh, same time period. Oh, right, because we used the 2 day off. Got it. Okay. All right.
So in 2012, when Billy Hill and the Hillbillies were asked to move back to Big Thunder Ranch, Disneyland spent some time celebrating the history of the Golden Horseshoe by having a two-month run of A Salute to the Golden Horseshoe Review, which featured songs and dance numbers from the original Horseshoe Review. And after this short run, the Laughingstock Company took over the main stage. The Laughingstock Company show at the Golden Horseshoe showcased wacky Wild West-themed improvisational comedy.
Can you imagine cowboy improv?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to do it.
So the comedy.
I'd rather die.
Yeah.
Basically.
All right, you're a horse. Okay, give me a situation and then give me a purse. I'm a person. Where am I from?
Yeah. The comedy troupe featured Mayor Sam J. McGillicuddy, his daughter Sally Mae, played by a man, and Sheriff Clem Clodhopper, who engaged in side splitting shenanigans. Number five, please.
I may have said something about the two of you getting married. I think you make a great couple.
I am not going to marry your daughter.
Now, don't do this to me. You give me one good reason why you're not going to marry my daughter, Sally Mae.
I've seen her.
This is not a pretty woman, boy.
She went over to the haunted mansion and she didn't come out scared. She came out with a job. If she was a Sesame Street character, her name would be Elmo. She goes into a pool and the water jumps out. An owl sees her and doesn't go, whoo, whoo, and goes, what, what? When she was born, the doctor slapped in.
Damn.
That went like a lead balloon, that one. It really did.
So I don't know if you can hear some of those, but the Haunted Mansion one was pretty funny.
That's a good joke.
She went to the Haunted Mansion. She didn't come out scared. She came out with a job.
I love that.
Like, damn,
things
dude.
That would not fly today.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine? When the owl sees her, it doesn't go, hoo, hoo. It goes, what, what?
Yeah.
My Lord, dude. And then it goes on. Like, there's way, way more. These, you know, middle school jokes.
Well, and what's funny is that's not what upset people. In 2015, the character of Sally Mae McGillicuddy was discontinued due to complaints by guests that a man was playing the role of a girl.
Yeah, and? Yeah,
that's it.
Okay.
The character, I just feel like, that's what you're mad about? You're not mad that he's making all these jokes, like, but you're mad that he's being played by a girl?
Yeah, I mean.
But also, it's okay that it's a man because clearly she's supposed to be coming across as very ugly. I feel like it's better that she's being played as a man than as a woman. Like, that's an ugly woman.
That's
like,
right.
It could have been, that's the whole setup for the jokes. If it was being played by a woman, then that would be rude, but
that would be hurtful.
The character
being
played by a man. And then so therefore it's funny.
Yeah. I don't know. This is just one of those.
People don't understand comedy. That's why there's so much bad TV. People go, oh man, I love this, you know, show about this doctor who has two left feet. And it's overly dramatic. I love it. It's on for 100 seasons, and I want 100 hours of it every day, piped directly into my cortex.
That'd be fun. The character was replaced with a female lead named Miss Rose, whose storyline closely resembled Slewfoot Sue and Miss Lily's before her, being the owner of the Golden Horseshoe. The Laughingstock Company show ran until September 15th, 2019, when it, along with a couple of musical acts in DCA, were discontinued. Supposedly due to the low park attendance because of Star Wars Land, if we can remember back that far.
Right.
On July 26th, 2021, the Golden Horseshoe Restaurant officially reopened to the public after being closed due to COVID. But the stage show has not yet returned.
I feel like you can loosely call that a restaurant. I mean, they have food there. Well, you're not wrong, but it's just like, here's warm mac and cheese.
And some chicken nuggets.
Well, wait a second. Did I just say restaurant? That's what I had written.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Our comedy timing is amazing.
It's great. Anyway. One thing I had yet to mention is that aside from being a fun stage show, the Golden Horseshoe is also a 309-seat, two-story, air-conditioned counter-service restaurant. To say it's not a restaurant, it's a little untrue. I mean, it's a huge place.
Well, it's a joke.
No.
Yeah.
You can get food at the restaurant during or between shows, and while the offerings have changed over the years, there are some staples that you can always expect, like chicken tenders, fish and chips, and a variety of ice cream sundaes and floats. As an aside, the names of the foods currently available at the Golden Horseshoe all allude to Toy Story characters.
Of course.
Which leads me to wonder if they may be working on another Toy Story themed show for the future.
I hope so. I really do. Because that's exactly what we need, is just this mix of timelines.
Well, why else would they be named after, like right now on the Disneyland website, they're all named after Toy Story stuff.
Because I feel like, where else can you put something like that? Because you need to have your IP sort of spread throughout the area. So maybe you have Buzz stuff in Tomorrowland, but you don't have any of the other characters. And where else was Woody going to be but Frontierland?
Sure.
But then that also is like, you know, what timeline are we on?
Well, and it doesn't make sense unless you're going to do a Woody show. Prior to this, they weren't named after
I was going to say, I don't think they were before.
No, this is new.
I've ordered those chicken tenders, sadly, in the past, and they were not, whatever good. That movie's called, themed.
Toy Story?
Toy Story themed. Sorry, my brain just broke.
It's all right.
I just, bleh.
Okay.
Also, I highly recommend not eating the fish and chips from there.
Ah.
Highly
not good.
Not doing that.
No.
So go for the Sunday.
Yeah, go for the Sunday.
And they have coffee. And that's always lovely.
If Gibson Girl is too busy, pop over for a nice Sundarino.
Yeah, you can't screw up ice cream that bad.
You can, but you can knock it on the floor, I guess. And that's about it.
No, Bev can knock it on the floor.
That's true.
No, but then I would eat it.
That's true.
Didn't we go to that review in 2012?
We did.
Yeah.
But when they came back?
Yeah, when they came back.
Yeah, it was an annual pass holder event.
That's back when we were cool, before we even had the pod.
Well, and they gave us a cookie?
I think it was
a photo of Walt and Lillian from their
anniversary.
Their anniversary party.
And a CD. It's like they reprinted the CD or whatever.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. And a shoe that was filled with drink. I have both of them upstairs.
A shoe that was filled with drink. Okay, that sounds fun.
Yeah, like a boot.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
It was cool. The Golden Horseshoe is a Disneyland staple. It's an original attraction and restaurant that can easily be overlooked, but it's full of history and Walt's touch. He loved watching the shows, and his favorite spot was the upstairs balcony to the right when looking at the stage. Over the years, there have been many other acts that have blessed the Golden Horseshoe stage, such as the Firehouse 5+2, the Dapper Dans, the Osmond Brothers, the Mickey Mouse Club, Zorro, and even Julie Andrews herself sung on the stage to promote Mary Poppins. Much like Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln or the Canoes, the Golden Horseshoe is often overlooked. But next time you're wandering the park, pop in and take a look at some of the artistic details, grab a sundae, and for now, imagine the dancers on the stage doing the can-can.
I remember seeing that and going like, wow, this is racy. Even though they're just like bloomers, I was like, we're in Disneyland right now. This is, what is this, Ralph Brennan? Come on now.
It's definitely a bit of a racy show. Well, the original show was. I think they kind of got tamed down in the
80s. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, when they did the thing. As an aside, purely by chance, I was reading a little bit about Wally Bogue. And, they always have the gunfight out in front of the saloon.
Yeah.
He actually started doing that. He was like having fun. He said there was like an Indian, I imagine a Native American man on staff who like showed him some tricks with a six shooter. And he's like, before, I've never really worked with a gun like this before. I have no idea what's going on. So he like taught me some stuff. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to go out and just do some like tricks and stumbles and, you know, do some prop comedy.
Yeah.
And so he started like whenever they felt like it, they would just do this gunfight out in front of the Golden Horseshoe.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And it was impromptu. It was whenever they had time or whenever they feel, like I said, whenever they felt like it. And he was, when he was still learning the gun, it was filled with blanks. Right.
Sure.
And so they're just it has like a little black powder charge. So it makes a bang and has smoke, but obviously there's no projectile. And he was saying that he would discharge his gun early often because he was like still getting used to it. So he'd like try to be pulling his gun from his holster. He would fire it and he would blow the pant leg off of his leg off. You know, he would blow his pants apart.
Oh, my God.
Because it's still like close.
Though.
Yeah. But he didn't mean to do it. So after every time he did that, he would have to run and get a tetanus shot, supposedly, and then go to wardrobe and like replace his thing. So
you're probably so annoyed.
Yeah, his nickname for a while was like the Tetanus Kid. this like thing. But everyone loved the gunfight so much. And he's like, one time I'm getting ready for it. And someone I've never met comes by and goes, okay, you're scheduled for a gunfight at 1:20 and 4:30. And he's like, I never did another one after that because they made me schedule that. It became a thing. It wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't me just horsing around. Now it was a thing. So I said, no, I'm not going to do this. And they hired like actual actors to go and do this. And they did like 8 gunfights a day and whatever. But he actually, you know, it was Walt's idea for that stage show, but he crafted a lot of the jokes. He created the Pecos Bill character just out of nothing.
Oh yeah. He wrote the whole show with Don Novit.
Yeah. And then Walt was like you said, he was like hiring him out for stuff, but he also had him like host a radio show, do writing for other movies. Like Wally Bogue was really integral for a lot of those, you know, little creative fun roles. So it's interesting. He's done a lot. He's done a lot for that park.
It's big.
Yeah. Good job, Taryn.
Thanks.
All right. That's an appropriate spot to take a break. We're going to be right back. We have some Disney news to cover, and then we're going to be out of here. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now back to the show that's more fun than waiting in line for Peter Pan on a hot August Anaheim day. Ears up.
That's right, everybody. It's more fun than doing that. Maybe. Maybe not.
Not if you're Bev.
I
am
love
a glutton
it.
For punishment.
You really are. Well, you should be a glutton for news because we have a little bit of Disney news to cover, guys, and I'm really excited about it because there is sort of kind of a lot going on.
I get that sense. In the past,
present, there's a lot going on.
With all the news that's fit to cover, it's the Ears Up Disney News.
That's right. Disneyland.
Sorry.
Disneyland plans a year-round holiday shop for Main Street USA, guys. Year-round. This is something that we need.
I'm so happy about this.
Then, I don't understand this because you can literally buy ornaments year-round at any store.
That's very true. But apparently this goes above and beyond.
They had one of those at Disney World. By the way.
Of course. Oh, yes. Yeah. I think we went in there, Tara.
I totally did.
Yeah. I mean, look, I like looking at Christmas stuff, but not in June. Like, I'll look at it, but I'm not going to buy it. I don't know. It feels too weird to me. Disney fans who love Christmas time at the Anaheim theme park will be able to get their dose of garland ornaments and nutcrackers 365 days a year once a new year-round holiday shop opens on Main Street. The new Plaza Point store will take over from the former Main Street Photo Supply Company location on Disneyland's Entree Promenade. I know I said Entree, but, you know, Main Street Photo Supply is like where you used to go to, like, get your photos printed up or whatever, but now you don't need to do that, I guess. It'll sell Christmas merchandise year-round with Halloween and Lunar New Year overlays, along with Easter, Hanukkah, spring, and fall seasonal decor. Okay. It'll feature ornament, housewares, linens, and holiday accessories. Okay, so when it said like a holiday shop, I'm like, oh, okay, we can't say Christmas, but apparently they're just doing every holiday. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool, man. I mean, you know, give me some Easter stuff, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll take it all.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think we would do like a Hanukkah stuff, but, you know. I'm just kidding. I don't know. It's supposed to be open on by October 16th.
Okay. So Bev will get to see it
soon. I'll see it.
I'm so jealous.
Hell yeah, dude.
Maybe you're gonna get to this, but there was a video that they put out of them like creating decor for the place.
Oh, that's cool. I have not seen it.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Yeah, and the decor looks amazing. I love all of it. It's like kind of old antique-y looking stuff, and it was a little unclear on the video if that was just like the stuff that they're going to put up on the shelf in the store or if that's stuff that they're going to sell.
Right, right. Like, yeah.
And I
like ambiance stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
And I really hope they're going to sell it, but I'm not sure. I kind of feel like it's a bait and switch.
That's almost the worst, man. When you go into shops that have cooler stuff that's not for sale up in the rafters than they do have for sale. Like, I've been there before, and I think Disneyland has some shops like that. We're like, that thing is really cool. Yeah, but you can't buy it. It's like the owner's thing. You're like,
Like everything in the Nightmare Before Christmas store.
Yeah, dude.
Everything up on the shelves I want. Yes, I don't know, really, right? Want the stupid jewelry.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff at Universal was the same way, like specifically in Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yes. That's sick.
Yeah.
Not for sale.
Absolutely. No, but it just looks cool. I was like, oh, great. I love it very much.
Yeah.
Speaking of cool things I love very much, the Muppets Haunted Mansion special is hitting Disney Plus tomorrow, Friday, October 8th at 12 in the morning. So tonight we're staying up, Taryn. Got a few more hours. Okay. Watching Muppets Haunted Mansion.
I think I'll just wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, the Muppets Haunted Mansion trailer gives us a look at Kermit dressing his best with Miss Piggy while Scooter pays tribute to Elvis. We also see Gonzo and Pepe the King Prawn braving the ride's infamous corridor of doors, plus various cameos from celebrity guest stars.
Yeah. Oh, who are the guest stars?
Oh, no, it's just, well, because Kim Irvine's in it. I was going to make a, do a huge slam on her, but I didn't do it.
Well, you don't want to get in trouble.
I don't want to get in trouble, no.
That nice lady.
She's so nice. I don't know why you're mean to her. I mean, I think she's nice. I don't know.
She's probably very kind.
I'm sure she's a lovely person.
She just doesn't have any taste.
And I would love to interview her.
She might be colorblind.
She might be. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine if, like, she can't see, like, crisp colors? Everything is just in pastel.
Yes. Or her color perception, she has cataracts and her color perception is just totally skewed. Like, there's just, like, a filter over it.
I had a boss who, you know, said he was colorblind. It's like, you know, red and green colorblind, I think, or something like that. I'm like, but whatever you think is this color, then you know it. Like, you know the shade, so you know that that's the red, right? So I don't, what does it matter? And he was always offended by that, and I never understood why. In 2019, Disney saw more than 18 million guests walk through its gates. 2020 was poised to be another big year, but then COVID hit and the gates to the happiest place on earth were forced to close. Blah, blah, blah. Things are changing and visitation to Disneyland is once again seeing a sharp increase. According to a report from some Orange County Register, I think is what it is, Disneyland attendance was just below 25% compared to 2019 levels when the park reopened. On April 30th, Disneyland attendance climbed to approximately 35% compared to 2019 levels by early June and more than 60% on June 15th. In July, Disneyland's daily attendance topped 75%. Disneyland attendance growth slowed slightly in early August, part to rising COVID-19 cases, but continued to rise in late summer after the brief downtick, according to the report. By late August, Disneyland attendance climbed to nearly 85% of 2019 levels.
Gross.
So things are just, they're still slow, but they're coming back.
So are parks at 100% then? Like they can?
I guess they don't know. The parks aren't saying, this report is saying, while it is unknown if Disneyland and DCA are close to operating at full capacity, guests are noticing the increase in crowds as reservations for stuff are hard to get.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and there's like photos and it's just, things are just basically back to normal, it feels like. Hmm. I mean, because even at 85% of 2019 capacity, that's still a lot of, that's a lot of people, dude. It's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Frustration over the new Magic Key Pass at Disneyland is mounting as annual pass holders are reportedly unable to reserve their place in the park weeks, even months out. And Taryn, as I mentioned, I think before, yeah, it was during the show, Taryn's aunt and uncle are going to Disneyland. They're there now, actually. They could only get Disneyland. They could not get DCA tomorrow or Friday.
And they couldn't get anything Saturday.
Wow.
Nothing.
Crazy.
That's what it is, man. It's just, that's, you know, raise the prices, make it harder to get into, and you're not going to have a single problem selling tickets.
Yeah.
As the Orange County Register reported Monday, reservations for Magic Key pass holders are, quote, completely booked for weeks at a time, as well as the next 7 weekends, stretching all the way through to Thanksgiving. The Magic Key pass was launched in August as a replacement for its annual pass, the key difference being that Magic Key holders have to reserve tickets before getting in. But as Disney enthusiasts schedule future trips to the park and Disney's California Adventure, especially close to Thanksgiving and Christmas, they're finding it near impossible to book spots at all, even though spots for regular ticket holders are largely wide open. Apparently, not this weekend for some reason. This applies even to those who have paid extra for the Dream Key, which promises fewer blackout days than the budget $399 plan. As of Thursday afternoon, all days in November and most in October are available for purchase for non-Magic Key holders.
Yeah, I bought my tickets yesterday, or my tickets were purchased yesterday, and it looked like the whole calendar was available to me.
Yeah, because you're a regular.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
Forked out $700.
Yeah, it's wild, man. I mean, it's
yeah. This is a. I saw a meme, and just a picture of Bob Iger sitting like laid back in a chair, and it just says "Miss me?" Question mark.
No, the answer is no, not at all.
Well, this didn't happen when he was here.
Yeah, but things were still terrible. I don't. I didn't like Bob Iger. I don't like really? The Iger. Yeah, mainly because of like the Star Wars and Marvel damage that he did. I just don't. You know, he just basically soaked a rag in the blood of Star Wars fans and wrang it out until there was none left. I'm not being dramatic. That's what happened, guys.
No, he did do that.
Yeah, I was at a Comic-Con that no one talks about anymore.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, okay, that's one IP that he certainly violated, but
yeah.
But as far as like day-to-day operations, I'm going to say I miss him a little bit.
I don't know, but I mean, that's like a larger question, because what did he do that Chapek isn't doing? Like I don't know enough about it, right?
I'm just assuming this is Chapek and
yeah, but it, again, man, you know, I will go to bat for Chapek a little bit, because it's like, we don't know that this was his idea. I mean, he signed off on it, but yeah. It also sounds like just sort of the thing that they need to do, because part of the problem was there are too many people at Disneyland all the time.
Yes.
There's just too many people. So you reduce the amount of people that are going to get there. Well, that means reservations system is probably the only way to do it. And then they're going to sell out. I mean, that's just what it is. So do we want to go to Disneyland whenever we want, or do we want less people when we go? And I think that's the struggle of being a Disneyland fan. It's like, there's no right answer. The right answer is whatever's not happening.
Well, yeah. But this situation that they are in is not okay. Like, for annual pass holders, I'm going to call them, because I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
For them to not be able to, for them to not be able to go when they're paying for this.
Yeah.
It's not cool.
No, it's not. And it's, you know, the Dream Key is $13.99 a year, and they don't.
Absolutely not.
And people can't go. And it's like, that would really upset me. But I think, you know, I don't know, man. It's that would bug me. But also, serves you right for buying this pack. I don't know, man. Whatever. It is what it is. Speaking of is what it is. Oh, is this just a video and it's not actually the story? Oh, stupid. Well, apparently it hailed in Anaheim yesterday.
There's been a lot
on the 4th, 3 days ago.
There's been a lot of like lightning and rain.
It hailed.
Really?
Hail.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. I love a good hailstorm, man. You know, like in the South or whatever, they get hail like the size of golf balls. And that'll like, you know, dent your car. We don't have that. We're like just little delicate pellets of like, you know, is someone raining kosher salt on us? That's cute. Salt Bay is up in the clouds sprinkling us, and it's fun.
Have you seen those, like, they're like the size of like a softball in some states? Like,
yeah.
Doesn't that just destroy cars?
Yes, it does. Like, there are videos of it just crushing windows, like windshields and stuff like that. Yeah.
Jeez.
My friend had to have a bunch of work done on her house. She lives in Texas. She was in San Antonio, and they had a huge hailstorm, and she sent me a picture, and it's like, it looked like a baseball. It was as big as her whole hand, and like the whole, like the side of her house had a bunch of damage, and like her roof.
Oh man.
Damn, dude. Apparently there's a new pilot programmed in Disneyland aimed at reducing food waste. Millions of hungry guests visit Disneyland Resort each year, and the park is now testing out a new initiative to help the resort become more environmentally friendly. Quote, we're asking guests to sort their food waste if they don't finish it, said Lotus Tai, environmental integration manager at the resort. That has got to be a fake name.
I think it's a cool name.
It's a rad name, but that's a comic book character name.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Lotus Tai.
Mm-hmm. What's your superpower, Lotus?
I wonder if that's a girl or a guy.
It's a good question.
Sounds like a restaurant.
Yeah.
I've eaten there before.
It sounds really good.
There are three receptacles at Galactic Grill in Tomorrowland, one for trash, one for food, and a third divided into compartments for mixed recycling and liquids. Quote, I usually just dump everything in, but my kids were napping, so I had a few extra minutes, said Mari Fergahali. Again, who was visiting. Did I say Mari?
Yeah.
Probably Marie. That would how a normal human with a human brain would have folds in it would pronounce that name. Yeah.
Probably.
Who was visiting her family from Redondo Beach for her daughter's birthday. Fergahali explained that she recycles the basics at home and applauds Disney's efforts. There's so much consumption of food and plastic and packaging, so I feel like at a place like this, it would really make a difference if even a small number of people did it, she said. But not at home in my neighborhood. I refuse to do this. I'm now going to never do this again. There are close to 100 places to eat at Disneyland Resort, and for the past decades, workers have been sorting food waste behind the scenes, with the majority of that waste coming from food prep. Quote, we pride ourselves on a lot of the work that we do behind the scenes, but we also want our guests to take a moment and participate in that and help us get to that zero waste goal. I guess I don't understand how it's zero waste if it's still going into the waste bin. Like, you're still wasting food.
It's zero.
Food
like
waste.
Environmentally.
Not going into landfills.
Yes.
Yeah. It's eventually converted into graham cracker-like crumbs, which supplemental animal feed for farmers all across the country. I mean, that's cool. Disney, says it diverts about 5 million pounds of food waste from landfills each year. Neat.
Good.
That's cool.
Yeah, love it. And then apparently there's a story that Disneyland will not require proof of vaccination to enter the parks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to go that route.
That's what I thought, too. Apparently not.
Because other parks are, aren't they?
Yeah, Universal is.
But they're fighting it. They have to because of an
Because they're in
County
LA
mandate.
County. That's right.
Yes.
Orange County won't ever get that mandate because they're red.
Universal is like, we're complying, but
we don't want to do it.
Happy about this.
Well, I forget who I was talking to, but they were at some place that's, you know, supposed to require proof of vaccination to enter, and like nobody checks. So it's just one of those things where it's like, you're supposed to have it, but no one's checking. So what does it matter?
Interesting.
I don't know. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got for you guys.
Good stuff.
What do you think of that?
I think it's great.
Thanks. All right, Taryn. Well, good job, dude.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, what was it? The History of the Haunted Mansion?
Yep.
Love that ride.
Yeah.
Golden Horseshoe, everybody. And then you know what? If you do have a chance, if you haven't done it yet, which I'd be sort of surprised, go look at some of those old, YouTube videos of like Wally Bogue and the old performances. It's something, man. I mean, When he says like he was doing high kicks, those things are like, as a 40-year-old man, he's kicking above his head, standing straight up on one leg.
Yeah.
This is hard. I can't even do it. And I'm super, what am I doing? And I'm super strong.
Yeah. I mean, his audition, he was 34.
Yeah, 34, dude. And he did that for another 27 years.
That's
insane.
And
I mean, what? You're only like 34 and a half and very limber. So
me, I'm 8 years old, dude.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I've never been two digit age in my entire life. Anyway, check him out. It's, it was really cool. All right, fact of the show, everybody. All the doors on these storybook land houses actually open and close, obviously, so cast members can change the tiny lights and do general maintenance and cleaning. Something I never really thought about. I mean, you got ducks over there pooping on stuff and hanging out and stuff. Yeah. I didn't really realize that there are lights in there that you need to change or whatever, so everything opens. It's like a fully functioning thing.
That's so funny. I would have assumed they would have like made the roof able to come off or
just
something.
Pop off the roof or whatever. Yeah, I mean, who knows?
It's a little easier, but
yeah, but it's Disney. What are you gonna do?
Cool.
You know what I mean? Them. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I have to like lay on your stomach and like hinge your body in there. And
I would love to do that. I would love for that to be my job. All right, we're gonna get out of here, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really, really appreciate it. And don't forget to ask for the 21st Amendment beers wherever you find good craft beer, like in and around, basically wherever you're at. I mean, wherever you're at. Our next show is going to be The Returns, Bev's favorite show of the year, the return of the Ears Up Spooky Stories, where we write spooky stories.
I love that show.
I love it, too.
I can't make it to that show. I'm sick.
Yes. B.
You
yes.
do so good.
You really do.
I hate it.
You hate it every year, and then you do really well.
Hated it.
I will help you. Anybody will help you. People will help you. But I think it's fun, and we're going to do it until perpetuity, until that we've run out of history shows to do. So then every show will just be us making up stories.
That's when I leave the show.
Yeah. Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you in the parks.